The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show, and happy Monday, April 23rd, 2018. I am Seth Leibson. Right off the top, let me give you our number. We've got a busy week ahead of us, and you can add to it in topic or enlightenment. 602-508-0960 is our number. As always, that's 602-508-0960. Love hearing from you. Love talking with you. Bill will happily, our producer, happily take your call. Off the top, let me just tell you, we're going to keep our eyes on the unfolding story out of Toronto, where a van attack has led to the deaths of, it seems like, nine. It appears as of now the body count is nine people dead. A deliberate act of driving a van into a series, into a group of pedestrians. Let's hope that that number does not go any higher, nine too many. And it looks like the suspect has been arrested, a 25-year-old by the name of Alec Manassian, if I'm saying that right. We don't have more at this point, but we will keep our eyes on that throughout the show. Maybe we'll get more background on Alec Manassian as the day and afternoon unfolds. But I will tell you, it is not surprising to me that when you type in his name into Google, Google likes to do, it used to be called precursion. I don't know what it's called now. Maybe it's still called precursion. It fills out common searches or fills out something that has been typed before. I love that word, precursion. And you will get Alec Manassian terrorist, Alec Manassian religion, that sort of thing, because the natural question on everyone's mind is whether this was a politically motivated terrorist attack, or was this an act of simple derangement? And sometimes there is an overlap of those two. But the use of using vehicles for terrorist acts is not, of course, new. I am looking at a story from just last month that, and as of now, we don't even know what the motive is here. But as of now, we do know where the idea of inspiring terror using vehicles comes from. Al-Qaeda's Yemeni branch encouraged its Western recruits to use trucks as weapons. According to CNN, a 2010 Webzine article, quote, "The ultimate mowing machine, and mowing machine not to mow grass, but to mow down the enemies of Allah." In September of 2014, ISIS spokesman Abu Muhammad al-Adnani called for lone wolf attacks using improvised weaponry. If you are not able to find an IED or a bullet, then single out the disbelieving American freshman or any of their allies, smash his head with a rock or slaughter him with a knife or run over him with your car or throw him down from a high place or choke him or poison him. People, groups that the Enlightenment seems never to have reached. And we're well beyond the Enlightenment at this point. We're indeed in some kind of weird post-postmodern era. Now, then this same article rehearses dozens of attacks using vans, whether it was at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, whether it was in Jerusalem, whether it was in Nice, France. Gosh, that was one of the biggest ones, July 14th of 2016, killing 86 people, whether it was OSU, Ohio State University, whether it was Berlin, whether it was Westminster Bridge in London, whether it was in Stockholm, Sweden, whether it was in central London, whether it was again in London at the Finsbury Park outside the Finsbury Park Mosque, whether it was the 13 killed in Barcelona, Spain in August of last year, whether it was Edmonton, Canada in September of last year, and whether it was near the World Trade Center area in New York. 8 people killed of October of last year. On and on this list goes. Again, as I said, in this particular case, we don't know the motive. We certainly know where the instruction came from, and whether it was a deranged man, whether there was a political motive, whether it was an act of terrorism on behalf of some religious or geographical cause, we will update you as soon as we need to know. But it is no accident. My point, it is no accident that people will do the search for those things, having been trained and, what shall we say, numbed in some respects to those things happening so often. I suspect, too, we will see a lot of Facebook, if not Twitter, social empathy with the flags. Yeah, a lot of virtue signaling and social empathy, another word for it. Thank you, Bill. Virtue signaling is the more common term. You bet. With the flags of Canada, what would you do? What would you have us do? If it is an act of terrorism, is it going to be get tougher on the terrorists? If it is not an act of terrorism, is it a quest to curb van purchases? If it is a quest to ban or curb van purchases, would you elevate the age to 21? This driver seems to have been 25. You get the point I'm trying to make here. The point I'm trying to make here is we will never live in a utopia when it comes to the instrumentalities of death or the instrumentalities of harm. But there are perhaps certain policies when it comes to the ideologies behind them and the armies behind them that can be deployed. And that works just as well for people, frankly. It's different strategies, different tactics, different methods, different motives and means by the government or by the governments when it comes to those who are simply mentally ill without a political motive. But there, too, I believe and have long believed we need some serious reforms in our mental health systems, in our mental health care, in our schools, not to mention a very serious thing that I talk about all the time. A few people do. Mona Charon does. Few others don't want to have the conversation. But it has to do with the issues of involuntary commitment and when people are considered harms to themselves or others. It seems almost weekly you can find a story where someone would have been kept away from the civilized community but for multiple times of being arrested and rearrested, treated and streeted again and again and again. It happened even most recently with someone in Phoenix area who it looks like the police had interacted with over 70 times before he ultimately made his last killing. I get very seriously, I take very seriously, understand and get the idea that we only arrest and incarcerate those after the fact, but there's a lot you can do before the ultimate act of violence. There is a lot we used to do before ultimate acts of violence that were short and considered far short of a criminal penalty. Indeed, involuntary commitment can be reformed so that there's not even a record of it, if needs be. There are many, many ways to handle these kinds of things that this society seems just incapable of discussing. Far easier is it to dispatch 17-year-olds away from school or to allow 17-year-olds to leave school to protest on a governor's or a state legislature's series of offices and make statements about history they know nothing about. Far easier, far more feeling good, resulting in nothing, just resulting in absolutely nothing until the next incident, and then we'll discuss it all over again with the same topics and the same talking points. And on it goes with the traditional threats of boycott of certain personality. Nothing which ever gets us nearer to making society safer, which really seems to me the ultimate goal that has been lost, whether it is in the war against or on whether it's the war against terrorism, whether it is to help the mentally disabled, whether it is to affect and curb and arrest criminal elements. It seems to me that there are so many ancillary concerns to the actual ultimate goal, which is to keep society safe. That's the thing that always seems to be eluded. And it comes back to the first task of, I believe, the educator. And we should all be educators. Any citizenry should be complete with educators, should be rife with educators. The first task of education is the statement, if not the restatement, of the obvious. What is the line of Michael Novak's that I love so much? It's not exactly apposite, but it puts you in mind of what the citizen's duty is. He said, a society that venerates moral virtue has 320 million policemen. A society that denigrates it will never be able to hire enough. I'm Seth Leibson. Our number is 602-508-0960, and we will be right back. Some nice Jersey Boys music there for you on the Seth and Chris Show. I love it. 602-508-0960. If you want to know why I give out the number so much, it's because people will tweet at me and email me from time to time. And by from time to time, I mean every day, saying you don't give out the number enough. So I just want to make sure I am inoculated from that charge. If you do want to follow me on Twitter, you can do so at Seth Leibson. I want to thank all of you who said hi to me at Pat's Run. If you did Pat's Run this weekend, this past Saturday, congrats to you. Had a great time. It was a great day. Ran into a bunch of old friends, met some new ones. My gosh, a lot of people there. What I can't reconcile, and I don't know if there's someone in the audience who can help me with this, is the news media said there were 28,000 participants at Pat's Run, which is a huge number, obviously. And yet when I get my official time from Athletic Links or whatever the company is that has the sponsorship with the bibs and the chip in them, it gave my racing time and my breakdowns out of some 15,000 participants. So I don't know if there were 15,000 plus runners, why they're saying there were 28,000 in the media. Is it possible that they're counting people who attended and didn't run? I don't know. I just don't know. But if someone can reconcile that for me, I'd love to know. There are probably more experienced runners than I. I try and do a couple races a year, but I've never seen a report on the number of attendees as distinct from participants. But whatever it was a great event and a lot of fun. And why did it have me looking at you, Bill? It had me looking at you for some reason. What was it related to the run? Maybe not related to the run, but you did say you wanted to add to our growing list of great lies of the 20th and 21st century. I think you did say that. Am I misremembering? I did take my B12 today, so.
That's something this producer can do.
Okay, give it to me. What did you want to add to our list of 20 and 21st century great lies that we tell ourselves?
If you get two dogs, they'll just play with each other and leave you alone.
As opposed to if you have just one dog. Everyone who has one dog, they talk themselves into getting, or someone tries to talk them into getting two dogs. You have personal experience on this?
Yes. I believe we can add this to the list of great lies.
They won't play each other with each other. The one I hear is, oh, it'll keep her company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You often end up with a kind of unbalanced relationship where one is bothering the other and the other wants to be left alone.
That's a good point. Or you get two wolves rather than one. Dogs being descendants of wolves, sometimes they redound to that nature. I don't want to embarrass anyone or any canine inappropriately, but in case she's listening, let it be known that it is not going unnoticed to me that once in a while, a certain dog whose name rhymes with Dagny does misbehave. Once in a while.
Shocking.
Yeah, once in a while, you will see a pillow having been destroyed or a book. Once in a while. So the theory you're propounding is you get two of them, you could have two pillows or two books destroyed. Or worse.
Yes, it's a trap.
It's not that they'll just read to each other. They might destroy a book. That's your point.
That's right.
Okay. Well taken. Add it to the list. Add it to the growing list. Fair enough. Other items on that list are innocent till proven guilty. Never again. If you save something in the cloud, you'll never have to worry that it'll always be there forever. I know there are other things.
Plug and play.
Plug and play. Deep frying anything makes it taste better. That kind of stuff. Right. So when it comes to the whole issue of innocent until proven guilty, you know, I think we're getting to the final half-life. I really do think we're getting to a final half-life on the story about Russian collusion in the election. I think people are finally getting really tired of it. If you think it's going to be an election issue, I think you're wrong. I think you can add it to the list of things the Democrats have tried to make an issue that hasn't worked. One of the reasons is I have been watching the special election taking place just to the west of us in Congressional District 8, where we expect tomorrow Debbie Lesko to have a tremendous victory. If you want to help, call the AZGOP, call the Republican Party of Arizona, ask how you can help, what you can do to help get out the vote for her tomorrow. We have been pushing that very hard. I have not seen ads from the Democrats or the Democratic candidate propounding anything having to do with Russian interference in the election. I believe that this is something the media has been trying to push. And even the latest iteration of it, where the Sunday talk shows were a little bit on this, it was mostly focused on the arrest of the records, the seizure of the records is the better way to put it, of Michael Cohen's, Donald Trump's personal attorney. I saw a pretty good roundtable on Stephanopoulos' show with Alan Dershowitz and Abrams. I'm forgetting his first name. He's Floyd Abrams' son, Dan Abrams. Dan Abrams and some other federal prosecutor who I didn't know. And, I mean, this is where we started. We started with the notion that Donald Trump's campaign or senior members of his campaign, let's just break it down, colluded with Russia to win the election, to steal the election, to affect the election, to distort the election. We are now investigating Donald Trump's personal attorney over records having to do with a one-night stand Donald Trump had in 2006 with a woman not his wife, and let it be said, a one-night stand he denies. So with the main witness, the assignee, if you will, in this case, being highly questionable in her credibility given the many denials and confusions of statements, that at least mixed statements she has given. Whether it happened or not, not the point right now. The point being, this is where the focus of the investigation is. A disputed one-night stand in 2006, many, many, many years before Donald Trump even contemplated running for president. That's where we're at. That's where the investigation, the heart and soul of the investigation is. Now, if you want to keep track of the best reporting on this, let me do it for you. Let me help you. Because again and again, when I return to this one unique reporter on this issue, I find it the most comprehensive and the most interesting, especially in a story where it's increasingly difficult to find interesting new takes or interesting takes on it. And that's the work of Byron York over at the Washington Examiner. I'll tell you what his latest is in a couple segments. Speaking of innocent till proven guilty, there's a new standard in Washington legal circles, or at least Washington political legal circles, that little bloody crossroads. And that standard now is you can't prove it's untrue. We are now forced into denying negatives as the new political legal standard in Washington, at least when it comes to attacking Republicans. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that. But first, the market and culture update with John Dombrowski. We'll find out if he ran in Pat's run and if he was one of the either 15,000 or 28,000 or the silent majority. I'm Seth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. I am Seth Leibson. If it is 3:34, it is time for John Dombrowski Jr. from Grand Canyon Planning Associates. You can follow him at grandcanyonplanning.com. John, happy Monday.
Hey, happy Monday, Seth. What's happening?
Did you have a good weekend? Any movies, any activities of special note?
No, we went up to Prescott for a little while. The weather was beautiful up there.
Great.
And got out of the valley for a little while.
You say
nice.
It the right way. I used to say Prescott. I grew up saying Prescott, but since my adult years, people tell me it's Prescott.
Yeah, and boy, years ago, if you would go up there and say Prescott, you would be lambasted.
That's what I do.
They didn't like that. You're not from these parts, are you,
well,
son?
Well, I was. I'll just, I'm a man of the times.
You are.
No one is more modern than me.
Uh-huh.
A courant, if you will. John, markets were fairly stable today, were they?
Yeah,
a little down on the Dow, a little up on the S&P?
Yeah, fractionally up on the S&P. We did have the 10-year Treasury reaching almost 3% today. That's going to be kind of a little bit of a change in overall feeling, I think, for the markets if we do hit 3%, just psychologically. But I think that's what was pulling the markets down today, is that rise in rates. So we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen with that.
Okay. One thing I wanted to throw at you, John, because you are a retirement expert, is I've collected, and I keep meaning to do it, emails from listeners saying, would you please have John outline or sketch out at least the differences from different kinds of savings plans that people do in contemplation of retirement, whether it's the Roth IRA, a standard IRA, 401k tend to be the three biggest ones people ask me to have you, if you might just sketch out the distinctions, the elevator pitch, if you don't mind.
Sure. So many people, if you're working for a company that offers some type of a retirement plan, would be a 401k. So you're participating in a company-sponsored plan. And this is a plan usually that you can contribute money from your paycheck into, and it's deductible from your income, so you don't pay taxes on it. You're putting it in pre-tax into the 401k, and at some point in the future, though, Seth, you're going to be paying taxes on it when you pull it out, and usually that you would be pulling it out after the age of 59 and a half once you're retired. Now, with a Roth IRA...
By the way, each of these has different rules, right?
I mean,
that we could go into for...
True.
Long time, periods of time, but each of them have distinctive rules, right? Like
correct.
On a 401k, I think I'm right, there's a maximum that can be planted into it.
Mm-hmm. $24,500.
Something like that.
If you're over the age of 50.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then I think also you can't withdraw on it even to pay a penalty if you still work for the company. I could be wrong about that.
Right, but there might be hardship rules that apply, or you could do a loan against it. There are some.
Okay.
It depends really on the plan document itself. Each company can build their own plan document and allow things that maybe others wouldn't. So it's really a personal kind of a plan document for each company.
All right. So I'm sorry to interrupt. That IRA world.
Right. Well, let me just touch back on the 401k again.
Sure.
Now, usually in many cases, not only will you be able to contribute to that 401k, but your company, if they're willing or able to, they may also contribute a portion as well to that 401k. And there's different opportunities. Maybe they'll contribute if you contribute, or they may contribute even if you don't, but there are different rules, again, that apply depending on the company. But that's always a great thing, and I would encourage folks, if your company is going to give you free money by contributing to your 401k on your behalf, please take full advantage of that. Make sure you do, and I find a lot of people, Seth, that don't. So we want to make sure if they're going to offer you free money, take it.
Got it.
All right. Now, with an IRA, that's an individual retirement account. This is different, right? So you're not working for a company, or you're not contributing to a company-sponsored plan, but you do want to put some money away for retirement. Well, one way to do that is by using an IRA, an individual retirement account, and that's just what it sounds like, individual. So it's yours only. It's not going to be a company-sponsored plan. And you can only put in up to $6,500 into that plan if you're over the age of 50. If you're under 50, it's less. So a big difference between $24,500 and $6,500, right, for the amount of money you can put away. And over a long period of time, sometimes it's difficult for individuals to accumulate a lot of money in their retirement accounts if they're only contributing to an IRA.
Okay.
So there are ways, though, for individuals, maybe someone out there, maybe a real estate agent or an independent contractor, to contribute much more than an IRA would allow. But you've got to talk to someone who can help you with that, and we're certainly able to do that here at our firm, Grand Canyon Planning.
Good, John. And tomorrow maybe you could tell us the distinction between a Roth IRA and a regular IRA.
You bet.
Okay,
all right,
go
Seth,
ahead.
Thanks so much. Securities and advisory services offered through Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC are not affiliated. Thanks. Have a good night.
All right, John. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sure. Bye.
I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. From Prescott to the Carefree Highway. Yeah, that Gordon Lightfoot song, he actually wrote it while driving on the Carefree Highway here in Arizona. I interviewed him once about it, and he told me it was thoughts he was writing down about an ex-girlfriend recent breakup. I guess that's still an ex-girlfriend. I am Seth Leibson. I was mentioning that there's this new standard of political legal judgment emanating out of the Washington-New York corridor. It's not innocent till proven guilty anymore. The new standard, as Byron York puts it, is you can't prove something is untrue. So we are now in the world of proving negatives. He writes, when a political figure is accused of wrongdoing, a conversation begins among journalists, commentators, public officials. Are the charges true? Can the charges, can the accusers prove it? Are the charges true and can the accusers prove it? That's how it usually works. But when it comes to Donald Trump, the allegations have taken a new twist, and there's a new generally accepted standard of justice. Now the question is, can the accused prove the charges false? That's the opposite of innocent until proven guilty. Can the accused prove the charges are false? It's not the way it's supposed to work, folks. Increasingly, the president's critics argue in, for example, the case of the Steele dossier, that it is legitimate precisely because it has not been proven untrue. There are denials, of course. And there are no credible pieces of evidence supporting it. But at this point, anyone can say anything, and it is the burden of the accused to prove something is untrue. We have seen this for a long time in other areas of political and legal concern, but now it's gotten to a level of high seriousness. Dianne Feinstein said, not a single revelation in the Steele dossier has been refuted. That's her quote. Not a single revelation in the Steele dossier has been refuted. That was Dianne Feinstein, the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. She should know better. That's not a standard of proof. It's not the burden of the accused to refute. It's the burden of the accuser to prove. Who else should know better? Lawrence Tribe, Harvard law professor. He tweeted, quote, retweet if, like me, you're aware of nothing in the Trump dossier that has been shown to be false. Wow. Again, one of the best-selling textbooks on constitutional law is the Lawrence Tribe textbook on constitutional law. And now the standard is it's the burden of the accused to show something to be false, not the burden of the accuser to prove that it's true. Nicole Wallace, putative Republican, former George W. Bush aide, said 2 months ago, quote, the dossier has not been proven false. Chuck Todd of Meet the Press said to former CIA Director John Brennan, so far with this dossier, nothing yet has been proven untrue. How significant is that? As Jim Comey has said, I think very famously, these were salacious and unverified allegations, Brennan responded. Just because they were unverified does not mean they were not true. Boy, I'm going to tell you, I know the prosecutorial class, and they don't usually go to judges with allegations they don't have some backing for, some burden of proof. The standards can vary, but they usually have to meet certain standards and certain burdens of proof. They don't go to judges and magistrates saying, well, we can't prove they're not true. That's just fiction. That's just pure fiction. And that's, as Byron York writes, where the Trump dossier story stands today. No one has proved that the most serious allegations are true, but since no one has proven them false either, some in the political class simply act as if they are true. What is still unclear is how much effort the FBI and U.S. intelligence agencies put into trying to prove these allegations. James Comey noted last year in his memo that Trump asked that the FBI investigate the dossier's so-called Golden Showers allegation, and Comey, by his own account, demurred. He said, I replied that it was up to him, but I wouldn't want to create a narrative that we were investigating him because we were not, and I worried such a thing would be misconstrued. I also said that it is very difficult to disprove a lie. This should be a full stop for a moment. A full stop on this. The only reason that the public would know that James Comey was investigating the allegations in the dossier and James Comey's response to Donald Trump that he wouldn't want that narrative out there, the only way it would be out there is if James Comey or the FBI leaked it. Do you understand how significant that is? James Comey is saying, I didn't want to give Donald Trump the opportunity to ask us to investigate the Steele dossier because I didn't want that narrative out there. And he explained that to Donald Trump. You can understand why Donald Trump at this point would question James Comey's loyalty, wouldn't you? Because the only reason it would be out there is if Comey or the FBI investigators leaked it. Okay? James Comey is basically making an admission against self-interest by admitting that whatever the FBI does, whatever he were to investigate, has the potential to be in the media. It only has the potential to be in the media because it would come from him or his top aides. That's pretty damning when the FBI is admitting that it can't keep a secret. When the Department of Justice is admitting it can't keep a secret, why should anyone think classified information means anything ever or ever more? This has been a big issue of mine for many, many, many years. The ongoing leaking, the ongoing theft, the ongoing publication and republication of classified information. There is certain right to know by the public, and in wartime particularly, and with people who have not been proven guilty particularly, there is also a public's right not to know. There is a public's right not to know certain things. Indeed, it leads to our safety. Indeed, when anti-terrorist programs are blown, as they have been done with leaks, that is a harm to the public, which has a right not to know, has a right to be kept safe by its government. John Jay said in the Federalist Papers that is the first duty of government to keep the people safe. When we leak classified wartime or other intelligence that affects the safety of our citizens or the general innocence of a citizen who has every reason to believe that the Constitution applies to him, we are all less safe. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. I wanted to finish what Byron York was saying about this new standard of justice that has suffused Washington, New York, legal and political circles. You can't prove something as untrue as the new legal standard, quite the opposite of innocence until proven guilty, or what we know as the presumption of innocence. Byron writes, for his part, James Comey, who once called the dossier salacious and unverified, still won't vouch for its truthfulness. Instead, he makes a much softer claim, saying that the core of the dossier is consistent with other information we'd gathered during the intelligence investigation. Byron writes, by the way, when it comes to the most spectacular allegation in the dossier, the sex story, even the dossier's authors don't have much faith in its veracity and its truthfulness. In the book Russian Roulette, Michael Isikoff and David Korn note that Christopher Steele, the former British spy who wrote the dossier, once said there was perhaps a 50-50 chance the Moscow sex episode was true. Glenn Simpson, head of the opposition research company Fusion GPS, which commissioned the dossier, reportedly considered the Russian source for the story a big talker who might have made it up to impress Steele. But now, some leading lights in the political conversation defend the dossier by arguing that it has not been proven untrue, as if that, instead of proof of truth, were the standard to apply to such consequential allegations. Setting aside the absurd and patently unfair guilty until proven innocent standard that thinking requires, it also ignores the fact that the FBI has never tried to disprove it, Republican Representative John Ratcliffe said. When the president asked the FBI to do exactly that, one of Jim Comey's secret memos documents the response. Comey told him, it's very difficult to disprove a lie. Yes, it is. And that's something to keep in mind whenever someone suggests the dossier is worthwhile, because it hasn't been proven false. Hasn't been proven false. You do realize that the law is upside down, or as Dickens put it, it has become an ass when we undo literally hundreds of years of legal guarantees that presume innocence. Because there is, as I have said, one rule for the Greeks and one for the Romans, one for the Democrats and one for the Republicans. And if you're of the quote-unquote wrong party, different rules apply to you. Something up with which we shall not put. We're going to shine a lot of light on this stuff as we go forward, and we're going to show you that the Democratic emperor truly does have no clothes. I'm Seth Leibson, a lot more coming right up.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.